It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be with you here in the studio today, and welcome everyone to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective Radio Show. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I'm a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation. I've been coaching leaders and their teams for 21 years, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. And if you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, do we have a great guest for you here today? Our guest is none other than, drum roll, the founder, producer, director, the brains, the man behind the curtain of OC Talk Radio, none other than Paul Roberts.
And the voice you hear at the beginning of each of your shows.
Here. Absolutely. And the end. Has anybody ever listened to the end?
Oh, sure they do.
And Paul's with us today, and we're going to have a conversation about internet radio and the power of podcasts. Paul, thanks for coming here today.
Well, thanks for giving us a chance to talk about this. You know, you've been doing this medium for a long time. You were one of the pioneers in this when it was just a crazy idea I had in the back of my head. And I know that you, like everybody else, thought, really? Am I going to? What's the purpose of doing this? How am I going to get anybody to listen? And what we always said is, it starts off simple. It's kind of like writing a book. You know, it's not so much that you're going to go out and sell 10,000 copies of that book that you printed, but it's kind of a, what should we call it, a marketing piece. It establishes your credibility. Hey, I wrote the book on the subject. Hey, I've got the radio show on the subject. So even if your audience is small in the beginning, I think there's power in doing this. Have you seen that?
I will admit, yes, there is, and I'll admit that when you first proposed the idea to me, I was very skeptical. If it hadn't been for the discount you offered, I don't know that I ever would have done it. Well, look, before we talk about the topic here, let's share a little bit. The audience doesn't know the man behind the curtain. What did you do before the radio station?
I had a varied career, and I say that like so many people today with a smile. I didn't set out to have a varied career, but life and the challenges and changes that come with it has made me adapt over time. Way, way back when I was in college, I thought I was going to be in radio. And in fact, I worked at a professional station coming out of college, ran the college radio station at the University of Michigan, came out of that, ended up getting a gig at a top 40 market, which is pretty good, in Norfolk, Virginia. Had to learn saying Norfolk really fast and not laugh. WMYK, K94. And thought that was where I was going to spend my life. But unfortunately for me, I entered radio at the wrong time. Radio was starting to turn into corporate radio, meaning that companies like Clear Channel and others were buying up massive amounts of radio stations across the country. They had dropped the rule that you could only own so many of them. And with that, they were firing all the local staffs, me included. And so what happened is they turned them into automated stations. So they would be programmed from one location and sent the same programming over and over again. That worked for a long time until it stopped working.
Okay. And after you left the radio shows?
So after I did that, came to California to be whatever, find my fortune, and ended up falling into entertainment PR. Another strange field. I represented Johnny Mathis and Anthony Quinn and Jose Feliciano, a bunch of people like that, and thought, okay, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. And in my 30s, ended up as a partner in a firm up in Los Angeles and started just thinking, I don't know, there's got to be more than this crazy entertainment world. So I started doing corporate PR and had some big clients, a company called Dayrunner, and for whatever reason fell into the hot tub industry, represented Sundance Jacuzzi and a lot of big brands in that, Brunswick Billiards. And so by the time the Great Recession came along, I'd been doing that for 20, 30 years and had a whole bunch of clients in these really, I thought, industries that would never fade away, like the hot tub industry and the billiard industry and all these things that quickly sank and went cold, ice cold in the Great Recession. And so here I was in my 50s having to reimagine myself, and that's when I met you and the work that you were doing with
Renaissance Executive Forums.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, okay. So now we're ready for you to move into radio. So tell us that story.
Well, originally I thought this was a way to revive my PR business. Remember when the when that dark time hit, the hot tub industry, for example, 75% drop in sales in a 2-year period. It was just devastating. Companies I'd worked with for years folded, and everybody else cut back and stopped doing PR and marketing. So all of a sudden, I thought, okay, my core business was built around a dead industry. How am I going to revive my PR business? And the other problem I'd seen for a while is that the PR business was under assault. Okay, so I got you the Wall Street Journal last week. Now what? There was no media left. The media itself was folding left and right, newspapers and magazines and whatnot. So I started looking around for other things that we could add services. A lot of PR firms were writing blogs, and because most of them are writers at heart. And I thought, well, that's not really me. What else could I do? And I stumbled into podcasting. And that's when I thought, hey, this is exactly like what I did in radio as a kid. Only it has even more potential because it's not once and done. When we did a show in the old days, it was over. It was over. We were on to the next one. But now the work just begins. You put it up on the internet. You turn it into a blog. Maybe you turn it into even a video on YouTube or something. You cut and find ways to repurpose it and reuse it. Put it on your blog. Give it a copy to the guest to put on their blog. All this work that starts to take place and gives life to that conversation you had maybe for years. It's crazy.
Okay, so you started an internet radio station. What does it take to start an internet radio station?
Well, that was an interesting question. My first goal wasn't to do that. It was just to create a podcast studio. And I thought, if I can't find outlets to tell my clients' stories, I'll tell them for them. You know, we'll create YouTube videos, we'll create podcasts, and through that, we'll tell the story directly to the public. And I still think that's a big power of this, all this new media.
Yeah, we want to talk about that. Yeah.
You don't have to wait for the intermediaries anymore. You can talk directly to your audience through these new mediums. Then I quickly realized that we live in Orange County, and it's the fifth or sixth biggest county in America, and we have no radio stations. Why? Because the demise of traditional radio and the fact we're under the umbrella of Los Angeles. All the radio we receive in this region comes from L.A. Well, Orange County has its own mentality, its own outlook, its own newspaper, its own airport. We don't want to have L.A. media, and they don't come down here and cover us very often. So I thought, well, maybe there's an opportunity. And rather than it was unaffordable, unable to go buy a radio station, and I don't even know why you would try and open a new radio station today. The only place people listen to them are in their cars. Why not instead use this new internet media and live stream the podcast? And that was a big eye-opener. I thought, rather than just, podcasts are by definition recorded and random. What if you did them on a regular basis and you streamed them live? Isn't that a radio station? And that's what I started thinking of it as.
Okay.
So then the question was, all right, how do you do this? And I quickly went to YouTube and everything else. Oh, everything's on YouTube. not this. Little pieces here and there. Lots of trial and error. I quickly realized where almost nobody is live streaming podcasts. It's difficult. Lots of technical challenges to do this. Lots of expensive equipment you have to buy to do that. But when you do, it creates a whole other urgency to it. I can go listen to the podcast anytime. But the live, it's on right now. It's live. I think especially for the guests and their audience, we do have a few shows now that says this thing's evolved through the years. We're up to about 20 different shows we produce. And we have a couple that say, I don't care about the live. I'm just going to do it as a podcast. Their guests cancel all the time. It doesn't have the same urgency. I get the studio another day. But when it's live, we're a plane to Hawaii. Hey, we're leaving with or without you. And people run through red lights and jump through hoops to get here. And their audience there's a certain segment of the audience that wants to hear it live, that wants to hear it first. It's the same thing Facebook is now doing with their whole push towards live streaming on Facebook or Twitter with Periscope. You can always listen to pre-recorded stuff, but this one's live right now.
You know, you talk about the guest reaction to it, and the story I love to tell is I had scheduled a guest to be on the radio show, and he was going to be out of town, but he said, well, I can probably call in from my hotel, staying at a very good hotel. I can call in from the hotel, and so we made the arrangements, made sure he understood the time difference, because he was going to be in New York. I'm sitting here in Orange County.
Right.
You've got the station here in Orange County, you know, so we're going to do this. Well, we finally get a call from him. He's stuck in traffic in a cab in New York City.
I remember.
He says, it's okay, I've got a good internet connection on my cell phone. I think we can do it.
Yeah.
And we conducted that interview from, he was in the back of a cab. I was sitting in my office in Fountain Valley. You were in Costa Mesa.
You're calling
in
via Skype. He's calling in via cell phone, and I'm mixing it all together and streaming it out the world. Yeah. How crazy is that?
I mean, but one of the things is it works, but the quality takes a hit for that kind of, when you're pushing technology that far.
Clearly. We've tried to do things, and we later thought, well, maybe that's too much here. We've had somebody in one country, and then we've had somebody else on a cell phone, and especially if they're moving in a car or something like that. But it is capable. We've done some crazy things. And I think, again, it goes to the point of, where is this all headed? I don't know. I call this an internet radio station because it's live, it's regular, and it's over one channel. I think that's the definition of radio. Now, nobody's ever challenged me on that. We even joined the LA Press Club, and they do awards for radio once a year. And we've submitted some shows from time to time, and they didn't kick us out and say, you're not a radio station. They treat us just like everybody else. It's live, it's regular, and it's on a station, as opposed to the podcast, which is recorded, random, and just a one-off. Now, keep in mind, the podcast is still where most people listen to it. The live is never that big of an audience. It's hard to get people to stop and listen to anything live today. But it does add another urgency. It does add another element to it. And I think it really changes the nature of it for the guests, especially, and everybody they bring to it.
Okay. So speaking of treating people like everybody else, I mean, I want to treat you like any regular guest.
Okay. Wow.
So you've got to answer the same question every guest has answered that's ever been on the show.
Okay.
What's your guiding principle?
You know, you say that every week, and I cringe because I wonder if I have a guiding principle. But through the years, I'm listening to you enough, I think I have been able to identify. I think I had one. I just don't think I verbalized it very often. To me, it's sort of a variation of this. Telling truth to power. I really believe that we don't talk enough anymore. Everything is condensed into sound bites and little snippets, 140 characters or less. I don't think we're doing what we do now, long-form conversations, long-form storytelling. And when we do, I don't know that we get real. Too many of them sound like infomercials. So I like these things to really get real. I'm always emphasizing to you and all the other hosts, don't just make this a puff piece. Really echo what's going on in the listener's mind. Ask the same challenging questions that they're asking themselves.
Okay. You did it.
I did it.
You do have a guiding principle.
I do. I do have a soul.
And I could have guessed that. Okay. So what are the common questions that people ask you when... You know, I mean, well, let me back up a minute. Walk us through, what's the arrangement? How do you get a host? How does a show
get on? How do I make money off of this? That's what everybody, when I went to the press club, that's what they all want to know.
And how do people use it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it is like.
We don't really care if you're making any money. It's the rest of us we're worried about.
What a traditional radio station is doing, particularly AM radio station, says their listenership has dropped. They can't afford to pay hosts to host programs anymore and hope that attracts an audience to which they can sell advertisers. They simply buy or get for free syndicated programs, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, all that. They split the ad revenue. And then all the rest of the hours, they just do reruns or try and figure out what to do. What most radio stations have done is the same thing we do. They sell the airtime so people can come in and host their own show. Now, we try and have some standards to it. I don't take everybody that walks in. I get people who think they saw Elvis last night or want to talk about alien invasions. We don't do that. We just do business shows. And once we accept somebody and think, all right, this is something, we try not to do two or three shows on the same topic. And once we say, okay, we'll do this, then obviously we charge a fee to produce it, to stream it, to engineer it, and then to record it, edit it a bit, and turn it into a podcast. That's what we do. So it is accessible with those caveats. You know, you got to jump through a few hoops to get to it. Now, once we do that, we view ourselves as the producer of the show, which is to say, we want it to succeed. We want you to stick around, if nothing else, and do this over a long period of time, because we do sell ads. That's the other way we make revenue. And if you succeed and build an audience, I can sell ads around it, around the shows. So I have a built-in incentive to make these shows succeed and to last. And we're trying to pioneer a new medium. I would love nothing better than to say to everybody, you know that guy Doug Gefeller, who's now all over the world here? He started here with us. Look what he's done with the show. So collectively, we're all experimenting how we use this. And that's been the epiphany. In the beginning, we thought, hey, this is just really a way to build your brand. I'm a thought leader. Gee, I must know something about it. I have a radio show. And it's also a powerful way to meet people. Hey, can I take you to lunch? No. How about being on my radio show, right?
Absolutely.
Who says no to that?
Everybody has time.
So it's a great way to say I'm an authority. It's a great way to meet people and network and prospect and connect. Beyond that, we never thought much about how to build the audience. We just thought, well, that's part of it, but wasn't the most important part of it, sorry to say. And over time, we realized, hey, people really do listen to these things.
Okay, so let's not go too fast here.
Okay.
There's two people in the audience that are a little slow. The rest are way quicker than you and I.
I'll speak slowly.
But, you know, just to sort of recap. So what I do is, as a host,
right,
I every month commit to Paul to buy, in my case, I buy a weekly hour radio show.
Right.
It's then up to me to get the guests to fill the time, to do the talking myself, or get a guest.
You get the guests, we do the rest.
That's right.
What you're saying.
So once the show is over, we show up. The guest and I show up here. We meet in the green room. We talk. We have a little chat. We
right.
come down to the studio. Paul puts the, as he calls it, the Mickey Mouse ears on us.
That's right. When you go to Disneyland, you got to wear the Mickey Mouse ears. So.
And we put the headset on. We test out the mic, and we talk for 45, 50 minutes. When we're done, Paul hands me the...
And that gets live streamed, so your audience can listen to it. They can listen to it over our channel, octalkradio.net, and then we give you a copy. In your case, you edit these yourselves because you want to turn them around overnight, but normally we edit them, and it takes us about a week to get the editing done.
And let me just go back. When you say you stream it live, I have had listeners from Australia.
Yeah.
I'm getting regular listeners. I don't know who they are, China, Indonesia.
I know, it's crazy.
You know, I mean, when I track it, those are the people that are listening to the show.
Right.
I have no clue how they found out about it.
All of this is searchable on the web. People are searching right now. Whatever you do, take this away. Whoever's listening to this right now, whatever you do, somebody's searching for it right now. So how do they find you? Well, hopefully they find your website. How does your website get driven up in the search engine rankings? One of it is by putting original content on it. And what's the easiest content you can create and the most powerful content, I think? Audio. Video's great, but audio is very easy to turn out and very easy to listen to in a smartphone format, which, and not maybe for your audience, but most of the audiences these days are listening in that way.
Well, again, and we're still trying to track that down. I'm surprised at the fact that the majority of listeners, as I've been able to track it for my show, are listening off of a desktop.
Because they will tell you, when that's part of the back end that you get.
Yeah,
you get some,
those analytics.
You get those analytics, yeah.
However, I do know that I have regular listeners that... listen to it on the road. I have listeners that listen to it at home. I have a couple of people that this is part of their exercise.
You said one guy takes a walk and listens to them.
Yeah, all the time.
And that's what people haven't realized. Everybody in the old days, we all wrote stuff, and that's powerful still. But as the world's moved to a 3-inch screen, it's hard for you to read much on that little smartphone. So I say everything's got to be turned into audio or video now. Everybody's entranced with video, and I get it. It's powerful. It engages all the senses, but it's not cheap. It's not easy. You got lights, camera, action, makeup, all sorts of things, and audio is just so easy. It's two people talking like we're doing now, and then just sharing it with the world. So it's easy to produce good quality at an affordable price. This isn't millions of dollars to do this. This isn't even thousands of dollars to do. It's relatively inexpensive compared to other mediums that you can come up with.
Absolutely.
And on top of that, it's the only one that they can listen to and multitask. You can't drive and watch a video. You can't jog and watch a video. But you can do both and listen to a podcast.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because we jumped on this. We think part of what we're doing that's unique is it's live streaming.
Right.
And yet we know that the vast majority of the listeners want to listen on demand. They want to listen when it's convenient for them, where they are,
no question,
over what tool they have that they're comfortable
right.
with.
The live stream is the icing on the cake. The cake is still the podcast.
Okay, so there's two things in my mind, and I want to hear from you. What is the advantage then of even doing live stream? Why not just go direct to the podcast?
Always a debate, and I've gone round and round about this. Certainly the majority of people producing podcasts just do that. A very tiny fraction of the people live stream it. So I'd argue you're different, if nothing else. I think the second thing is it creates a different impression. If I just do this at home on my recording equipment and say, would you like to be on my podcast? Okay, maybe. But if I live stream it over a station and go to that effort and energy and actually come into a studio and they come into a studio, it suddenly has a different feeling to it. I've seen the guests that come on in the studio, compare that to the kind of exchanges and connections you make when you're just talking to them over a phone. They're in their bedroom, you're in their bedroom. I don't think it's the same. You, for years, would just, even when I had a studio, didn't want to come down here. Which I'll just do it from my house. And then you start saying, it's a different experience. There's something magical when they come in here. They've never done it before. They're nervous. You're the authority. They're asking you, how was I? It's important. They all got to get their picture taken when they're here and share it with everybody. It's like a ride to Disneyland. It's an experience that you give them.
So I think that...
So maybe it's more important for the guests. Maybe in the guests and their audience, that's the most important element of it, is that it's live and I'm on today. When it's when you're just trying to reach a general audience, yeah, it's probably as good listening to it live as it is later.
Well, I'm going to debate that.
Okay.
As a host, I'm going to say, one, it is infinitely easier to get guests to show up and to keep their commitment to show up when it's live.
It really is.
Because
you think it would be the opposite, because it's an extra effort.
They put it in their calendar. They're going to be here. They meet me early in the green room. We talk.
It's important to them.
It's important. There is a deadline, so they honor that deadline.
Right.
And since I don't charge people to be on the show,
there's no cost for them.
They feel an obligation to then meet that commitment and be here.
Right.
Now, the other thing that I think makes the real difference is that the quality of the interaction, the energy in the conversation, the spontaneity of two people sitting across from each other with mics, knowing that it's live, not knowing whether we're talking to thousands or hundreds of thousands. But knowing that it's live creates a whole different energy level to the conversation.
It really
which
does.
I think makes it much easier to listen.
And I've said that to people, and they go, yeah, I don't know. But every single show tells me the same thing. I see it. There's an electricity. There's an energy that doesn't take place. In the beginning, I didn't have a studio. I tried to do this out of my house, and I thought it'd be simpler for everybody. They're on Skype or they're on a phone, and I just mix everybody together and stream it out. And that's still capable. But when we opened the studio 5 years ago here across from South Coast Plaza, everything changed. We all, I think, had that same epiphany, how excited the guest is, how important it is to the guest, and how it changes the energy and the content that you create.
Well, you know, I can speak from this personally, because about once a month I do not invite a guest.
Right.
Because there's topics that I want to talk about and share and get recorded and create that material for my own use.
Right.
And
to send to clients beforehand or afterhand to show what you like. You do a thing on onboarding and all that, and I know you've used those sessions where somebody wants to hire you or meet with you, say, well, listen to this before we meet, and that'll maybe focus the discussion.
Right. But I can tell you that even though I do a lot of public speaking, I'm very comfortable talking to a group of two, a group of 20, or a group of hundreds. But when I come down to the studio and I'm doing the show with no guest, talking to myself into the mic, I am exhausted at the end of it, because it is so hard to get the energy level up to the level that it would be with a guest.
Yeah.
And it isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I listen to myself and I go, oh man, I should have had somebody else I was sparring with.
Well, and when the guest is on the phone, they have a tendency to just start spitting out all the answers. When you're sitting face to face with them, you can stop and say, wait a minute, I don't understand that. Are you saying this? It becomes a true conversation.
Okay. All right, so that kind of handles why we do it live and what's good about it.
I feel like I've discovered a gold mine, and I'm digging it out with my own two hands. There's almost nobody doing this in the whole country. There are lots of people doing podcasts. There's estimated to be about 250,000, which is still small in terms of how many people are doing videos. The vast majority of those are comedy or music or crazy or hobbyists and stuff. Very few businesses doing this. And I keep saying, why? It's such a powerful medium. And you can, I'll throw one other thing that we've added to it. Because we have a studio now, we put some cameras up and we're experimenting with live streamed video. Why would they want to watch you talk on the radio? I don't know. But Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh, they showed there's an audience for it. So we get it. And then we also are trying to take these and turn them into transcripts as well. So that the idea is every time you sit down, you get a piece of audio, a piece of video, and a written piece that you can turn into a blog or something else.
Okay, so let's talk about why do I want to do a podcast? What am I going to do with a podcast?
Well, again, I'll go back to just those five things, values that we think we've discovered over 5 years. Seems like we find one a year. The first was just, hey, I'm an expert. I wrote the book. I've got the radio show. That sets me apart from my competition. The second that we quickly discovered is it's a powerful way to meet anybody you want to meet. Can I take you to lunch? No. Would you like to be on my radio show? Sure. Then the third is it's also a viral marketing tool, because as you give them a copy, you're not going to charge them to come on. We don't believe in that idea. So the guest comes on for free, and then you give them a copy, and they take it and send it out to everybody. And that's the secret. Everybody says, how do you get people to listen to this? Get good guests and get them excited. They'll bring you the content and the audience if you do it right. Then it took a couple years to figure out the last two values, which is the value of the content itself, particularly for SEO purposes. Google rewards you if you write original content or shoot original videos or create original anything and update your site often. The spiders come back more often. They list you and categorize you under things, and they move you up because they assume your site's more interesting, particularly with audio and video, because the people will stay on the site longer. One of the metrics they track is how long do people spend on your site. The average amount of time on a site is 30 seconds. If you can get people to listen to 30 minutes, Google goes crazy. So there's some real value. Again, look at who I am. Look at who I want to meet. They'll take it and send it out to people, and the search engines love you. What we haven't talked about is what should be the most obvious thing, the value of the content itself. If you create good content, people will come. They will find you. I don't know how, mostly through iTunes and searches and stuff like that, but they will find you and come to it. Starts a conversation.
And I want to jump in on that for a little bit, because it took us a few years to figure out what the missing piece was. I mean, we had the world's best kept secret here. Often joked about that. We had interesting guests. We created great content. We recorded it. We had great quality recordings. We posted them on the websites. Blah.
Yeah.
Who knows?
50
Nobody
people
knows.
To it or something.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
So we then realized that you're not done then. That's just the start. What you have to do, and it is so easy, is then use your social media outlets to make people aware of the content that you've got. There's an opportunity to let them know that, hey, I'm going to be talking to Paul Roberts tomorrow about internet radio and the power of podcasts. That's one contact. Then there is, hey, we're getting ready to go on the air in a few minutes. Rick is great at that. I always see
especially
his,
through Twitter.
I always see his Twitter.
Yeah, what's happening?
Getting ready
right
to
now.
Happen. You know.
Right.
And then there is, hey, I had Paul on the show today. It was great. Look back on the site tomorrow because we're going to have the recording up. And then the recording's up, and then it's like you can go and listen to the show, and it tells you about this. And
you
here's
got something
the takeaways.
To put in your social media chain. What else do you tweet and put on Facebook and Twitter? I went to a meeting. I came back from a meeting, and every business says, I hate this stuff. It doesn't. I tweet and nothing happens. I post on Facebook and nobody buys because you're not creating interesting content.
So the thing is, when you commit to doing a show, you have to commit to finding guests. You have to commit to being a good host, being a good interviewer.
Working at that.
You have to commit to editing or getting the show edited so that it listens well, it plays well.
You get rid of the ums and the ahs and the gaps and all that.
And then
stuff.
You have to commit to making people aware that the show is now available.
Use it. Otherwise, you paid all this money and gone through all this effort and you stick it in a drawer. You've got to make sure the guest gets a copy and gets excited to push it out, and you yourself have to push it out through social media and other things. Let me give you a couple other ways people have repurposed the content. You mentioned Rick, who also does a show here, a Critical Mass radio show. He takes, as you do, and asks every guest one question. And he takes that question, turns it into a book at the end of the year. I asked 100 businesses, 50 businesses, this question. I forgot what his question is. I think it's the same one you ask, yes, the guiding principle here. And so the idea is now he's got a book, a self-published book, which, again, he can give out as a business card, a marketing piece. It shows who he knows. It shows how he thinks. And it's a unique piece. And he's actually sold a few pieces along the way through Amazon and other efforts that he does. So you can turn it into a book. Some people have turned it into a symposium or a conference. We collect all the guests that we had last year, and we have them come, and we do a half-a-day seminar, and the three best guests are the speakers, and the rest of them are the audience. It can be turned into a blog entry. It can be the follow. We talked about this, and here's the in-depth version of it. We're going to delve deeper into the blog. You can actually create a transcript out of it and make it the blog, and then write further blogs about it. The idea is just what you said. It doesn't stop when the show stops. It just starts. So why wouldn't you do a show? It can be a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. But
that's the one thing I always warn people. I can give you 100 good reasons to do it, but it can become a pain in the butt quickly if you don't commit to it. This is content marketing. This is trying to create interesting content so you'll be found, so that you'll meet people and start conversations with them.
One of the side benefits of doing the show for me personally is that it forces me to go to networking events.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I mean, it's really easy to look at all the networking events that are going to take place in Orange County tonight and go, I think I'd rather go home and have a glass of wine and watch
yes,
television, you know,
yes,
or read a book.
Right.
But, hey, I've got to line some guests up for April, so
right,
I better get out to some networking events, meet some new people, and screen them to find the interesting ones that I want to get to know.
And does
better.
That give you some other reason to be there and talk to people other than, hey, how's your business and what do you do?
It gives me a reason to talk to them, and it gives them a reason to talk to me.
And okay, I'll tell you what else some people have said is to some other shows have done this, to remember you. We all go to these networking things and come back with 50 cards, and you say, who are these people and why did I talk to them? And do I ever want to talk to them again? Maybe you take them and put them on your mailing list, and then they groan and say, oh, my God, I got junk I didn't want to get. But if you collect those, if you give out your card and say, I'm looking for guests for my show, I guarantee you they'll remember you, and they'll contact you. And if you do interview them, they'll want a copy of it. I think it makes you stand out. I've seen it a couple of times myself. I should do more of this when I've gone to networking and say, I have a station and we're always looking for hosts and looking for guests. People line up to talk to me.
Yeah. It lets me meet people I wouldn't otherwise get a chance
to meet.
That's it. It lets me get information firsthand from experts. What a great way to get information. Mm-hmm. I'm a curious guy. I mean, I like to read, but there's nothing better than sitting with the author mm-hmm. and hearing what they have to say about the book. And as a coach, the other thing, again, I don't know why it took me so many years to figure it out, but I have found that I have this vast reservoir now of podcasts mm-hmm. on multiple subjects that when I'm coaching someone, I can go, you know what? You need to listen to Carly Anderson's talk about getting your certification at ICF.
Yes, right.
She was a guest on the show. She's the expert in this area. I'm not. Let me send you the link to the show.
Don't just listen to me. Let me send you a third-party endorsement of what I'm trying
Absolutely.
To get you to learn here. Yeah.
You know, and same thing. By this same token, when I put out the newsletter or when I do a show and I mention someone else,
mm-hmm.
I hear from them. They go, hey, Doug, I see you mentioned me on your show. I see you put me in your newsletter.
We're sharing.
It's a perspective of abundance. There's no scarcity here.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that abundance idea is important, and none of us got that till about 4 or 5 years in. If there was one recent epiphany many of us have had in the last 5 years, is there's value in gathering the content just for yourself as a human being, as a business owner, as an enlightened person here. It forces you to get out and talk to a certain number of people every month in a conference, not just a casual way, but a real conversational, in-depth way. And what can you learn out of that? I'll give you an example. We had a guy who was an attorney in Long Beach, and this is probably our most success story today. An immediate way it paid off for somebody. It's always difficult to find out, why do I tweet and why do I do Facebook and why should I have a podcast? What am I getting out of this? in his case, he wanted to, he was doing real estate, and real estate was drying up. The big real estate projects, as you know, were not building a lot of office towers and office parks and stuff here in Orange County. A lot of the land's been built out. So he's in his 60s, and he's trying to say, what the heck am I going to do? I want to develop a new expertise. And for him, it was import-export. He's in Long Beach. And I said, do you know much about it? He said, not really, but, you know, maybe if I start doing a show, I'll learn. He did. It was like an education for him. Talking to these people week after week, he learned, talking to the Department of Commerce and the ports and all these people, he learned a great deal about it and made connections in the field and was able to parlay those connections and turn it into a big conference. And out of that conference, he brought a couple of prospective clients to say, look at what I know and look at who I know. And he got a big six-figure job that he still has with a medical device company here who was looking for an attorney that specifically had import expert experience. This gave him the experience he lacked.
It is a way to learn. It is a way to make connections. It is a way to pay back by sharing those connections with other people and putting people together. And it is a way to enhance your reputation. You know, people judge you by who do you hang out with.
Right.
Well, we hang out with some really brilliant people. So
I always say it's a great way, as I said before, it's a great way to show what you know and who you know. And if you can convey that to people over a period of time, that's got to have a positive effect on your business and your reputation.
We're getting close to the end here. What else do you want to share with the audience here, Paul?
I think the thing that intrigues me the most about this is, where is this going? What is the future of this medium here? We talked about why people are doing it. We talked about why we've set it up the way we do it, and it's live and it's later. So it creates two different aspects, and we try and get as much out of it, as much different kinds of content. We try and repurpose it and reuse it over and over again to fill social media channels, to drive search engine optimization, to be a prospecting tool, to create other marketing materials out of it, events and whatnot. Where does this thing go? That's what fascinates me the most. Are we just content marketers and we're just creating content to fill up our blogs? Or are we really pioneering a new form of radio, a new form of media? Is this what will replace what they now call terrestrial radio? As that dies, and believe me, it's dying all over the place here. Clear Channel declared bankruptcy, and all these other big chains that bought these radio stations are struggling. Nobody's listening to them, particularly the AM stations, except in their cars. And now in your car, you don't even have to listen to that. You can stream this easily into your car stereo.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people are.
My wife was real disappointed to find out that she was going to have to listen to my latest podcast when we were going somewhere. She thought she was safe in the car.
Safe in the car? No.
You know, because we post it on our website. We post it in iTunes.
Right.
You know?
So what happens when every car has Apple CarPlay in it? I think that's what they call it.
Yeah.
Or the Google version of it.
Right.
One's iCar and one's CarPlay. I forget. Apple must be the iCar one. So what they're going to do is they're already doing, building it into the car. So you can simply say into the speaker on your steering wheel or whatever, play this live streamed radio station, play this song I bought on iTunes, or play this podcast, either live or either live version or the recorded version. When you give people that kind of choice, how many of them are going to stick with the one station in town that plays 10 songs over and over again?
See, I think when we talk about marketing, and you and I talked about this before the show, I am not a big believer that driving to produce content
in and of itself
is the destination.
Right.
Because the destination is to get revenue, to sell a product,
get
a client, to create a relationship with somebody you didn't know. And the content is just a way to do it. It is not the end all. And that's where we made the early mistake with the radio show and with the podcast, is once they were done, we thought we were done.
Right. We made the content, we made the connection.
We had loaded the rifle, but we didn't shoot it.
Exactly.
You know.
So and we've had people on like Joe Paluzzi from the Content Marketing Institute, if you've never looked it up, do. Fascinating organization that really advocates content is not just a way to get found. It's not just the trick to get in the door. It's not the newsletter you send them just to get them to pick up the phone, or the silly joke you send them, or the cat video, or whatever it is. That there's value in good content, and that content should have a strategy of content. content is there to, as they say, move you through the buyer's journey. So there's some content that establishes who you are and what you do, some content that starts to address certain topics or concerns they have. And then, here's the hard one, get into the objections. You can create content that deals with all these objections so that as they listen to it, because the buyer doesn't want to talk to you right now. They're afraid of being sold and inundated. So the more you can let them serve themselves, and then when they're finally satisfied, you're the guy, and this makes sense, and you've answered all my tough questions, then and only then will they raise their hand and call you.
Well, you know, a funny thought that I've had lately is that it used to be that in marketing, we used the shotgun approach. We did mass marketing. When I was building homes, we would take out ads in the LA Times for ridiculous amounts of money for the weekend, hoping that 30 people would come by the track and buy a house.
Right.
The two houses that were for sale, whatever.
What's a billboard? $5,000 or $50,000 or something for five people to respond. Yeah.
Today's marketing is more a marketing of one-to-one marketing.
Absolutely.
The internet, the amount of data that's available allows us to do more search to identify the person that's truly interested in our product or service. Now, I think that once we have created a podcast that has an appeal to many, then the next step is to use your social media, use your networking tools to then identify the few that would be motivated by that podcast and to then make it available to them. And this is so easy with a podcast.
And let me make two points about that. We had somebody on one of our other shows today, and they were talking, this is on a show called Sales Pipeline, and they talk about how to build pipelines. The expert that they had on had some software, some big company, a well-known guy in the industry, and he said something I thought was very interesting. I asked him the question, because I get to be a co-host on the show, are we going to a point where it's all inbound, where outbound is dead? The idea of cold calling and reaching out to people, that sort of shotgun approach, is going to die? Or is it all the ultimate goal to just fill a pipeline by creating such cool content, such visibility, such connections that it's always just flowing in? And he said, well, he said, the better you're inbound, the better you're outbound. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, the more you can check information, they've been to my website, they've visited three pages, they've done this, you can start to identify how to respond to them in a more targeted fashion. Not just a, hey, let's talk, but I saw you were looking about these specific questions. Here's something you might want to see to address that. So I totally believe in that approach. And I argue this point all the time, endlessly, with my brethren in traditional media. I belong to the Orange County Press Association and the LA County Press Club, and go to meetings there with people who write for the papers and work on traditional radio stations, and we endlessly argue this. Our traditional media is built on broadcasting, mass marketing. You get in front of a million people and maybe two will respond. I think the future of the internet is narrow casting. It's niche marketing. It's targeted marketing, and that's what this is.
Absolutely. And I think having the podcast stored away in a safe to be able to distribute it to many, you know, I will go out and I will speak to a group of people. I'll give a presentation. Then I will be able to say, and if you'd like more on this, we had this same conversation 3 weeks ago, 2 months ago, 6 months ago on the radio station. Let me give you the link to the podcast, because some people, rather than taking notes, would like to go back and re-listen to it.
Exactly.
Or I can post the transcript along with it onto the website. So now some people who don't like to listen can read.
The best shows we have are not the ones with the broadest topics. Everybody wants to get a million listeners, and I say that's the wrong attitude. It's to get a hand. It's not how many listen anymore, it's who listens. Not how many, it's who. And the silly example I always give is if we did a show on quilting, which we don't, I don't think there'd be a lot of people listening in Orange County. Maybe I'll get quilters calling me up. Maybe it's bigger than I think it is. But we'd have them all. You know, however big that, we'd have all 50 of them or 1,000 of them or a million or whatever it is, we'd have that audience because we'd have the only quilting show around. And if you wanted to reach those people, we'd have it. It's like an online campfire where people gather to have that conversation. So I say the more narrowly you can define the conversation, the more likely you will find an audience for it. and not be fighting over a million people are trying to do a business show or a real estate show.
Well, and you can't get too narrow. You know, I mean, the target audience that we use for this show is coaches, HR professionals, and business executives.
That's pretty
and
narrow.
And people go, well, why do you have all three of those? Well, coaches run a business, so they need to know more about business topics. Businessmen have to do training and managing, and that involves using coaching techniques. HR is all about people. Well, we can't do either one of those other two without people. So there's a synergy in sharing what's going on, what is the cutting edge, what is the latest tools that each one of those fields are using. Let's share it among them.
But let me give you an example, and I don't wish to be cruel here, but we've got one show that just focuses on HR, Talent Talk Radio Show. And it was a company that does background checks, and they just wanted to meet all the HR directors, right? And out of that, now they have found that they started such a conversation within the HR community because they really got the only show that's really just narrow. It's just about HR. It's really in the weeds. It's not something the average person can really just listen to and grasp. You got to really understand the field, and they get some pretty in-depth discussions about the challenges of HR and, I don't know, the 1,000 regulations and stuff that go into that. However, that show has now built an audience of 40, 50,000 downloads a month. It's phenomenal. On a show, on a topic that's so narrowly focused and so technical, I wouldn't think they'd get 10 people listening to it. And yet, because they fill a niche and a need, and that audience, there is no other podcast on that kind of topic. And they've gone after bigger and bigger guests as time has gone on. That's been part of it, too. In the beginning, they were just doing Orange County business owners and Orange County HR executives. I said, try bigger. Talk to Southwest Airlines. They're not going to be on my little podcast. Not a podcast. It's a radio show. Okay. And they got Southwest. And since then, they've had, in the last 6 months, they've had the HR directors for Sears, for Van Shoes, for Lockheed Martin, for Paramount Pictures, and General Motors, the worldwide director of HR.
You can talk to anybody if you have a radio show.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Paul, we're getting ready to wrap up here. How do people get in touch with you if they are interested in talking about having their own radio show?
Pretty simple. Go check us out first and listen to what we're doing. See if it fits for you. And if you're willing to make the time commitment, that's the biggest thing. This is something you're going to have to do. You can't, like any social media, you can't just do it randomly. You got to do it on some regular basis, whatever that is. So if you want to do it weekly or biweekly even, or maybe even monthly, but I think the more often you do it, the better. Go to our website, octalkradio.net, octalkradio.net, and check us out.
Great. Paul, thank you for, you were going to be here anyhow
I was
to produce
here,
the show, but hey, thank you for piping up and sharing your wisdom with us.
Well, thank you for being a pioneer. You've been doing this now, what, 5, 6 years?
No, it's more than seven.
Seven, wow. Yeah, because we did it for a while where you did it outside.
Yeah.
I just appreciate that. It shows, we've got a lot of shows like that. Once it's hard to get people to try this. Once they do, I think there's a lot of power to this, and a lot of, we're still experimenting all the things that we can get out of this.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio show community as a participant.
Wow. Do I get a different badge at
you
the events now here?
You get a different badge. Well, okay. Look, if you have been listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. If you've been going to our Podbean site, you might try shifting over and looking at the website, The Coaching Perspective. We've reorganized the material. We've added different search capabilities. It makes it a little easier to find your favorite show. So while you're there listening to whatever show attracted you, be sure to check out the other shows. We've had lots of great guests over the years, lots of interesting topics. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Or go to the website. There's a place on there to get on the newsletter or to say you're interested in our coaching services or being a guest on the radio show. We've got some great guests coming up. I'm really excited. The president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation is away at a international conference. I believe it's taking place in Poland. And when she gets back, we're setting up a time for her to be on the show and share with us what's going on in the coaching world, truly in the world. We also have some other great guests lined up. We're going to talk about relationships and how you handle stressful relationships with the divorce strategist. And we're going to talk about what are some of the tips, the common asked questions and pitfalls that coaches run into. So we've got an exciting April agenda just ready to go here, and I hope that you'll stay tuned to it. Well, I hope that you've enjoyed today's show. As always, our goal is to provide you with information and knowledge that you can put to use immediately. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.